DW Africa Link.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa effectively killed the death penalty in Zimbabwe on the last day of 2024 by signing the Death Penalty Abolition Bill into law. In truth, it wasn't such a shock, as the last formal execution took place 20 years ago in Zimbabwe. But how and why Zimbabwe had the death penalty in the first place, and then came to abolish it with resounding support from all sides no less, is intriguing, and might serve as a blueprint for other African nations to follow suit. I'm Kai Nebe, welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Zimbabwean President Mnangagwa actually faced the death penalty himself as a 21-year-old in the 1960s during Zimbabwe's liberation struggle. Today, Zimbabwe has about 60 prisoners on death row, but their lives are set to be spared. And many Zimbabweans support Mnangagwa abolishing the death penalty, like truck driver Samuel Macheka.
I think a man or a woman should just die a natural death. Even if he has committed a crime that deserves death sentence, I think it's better for that person to stay so long in prison.
For student Tatenda Hanangwama, it's a religious question.
It's supposed to be abolished because biblically one is supposed to take someone's life. So therefore, I think someone should receive a severe punishment instead.
In fact, the idea of a state execution was so unpopular that Zimbabwe famously could not fill the vacancy of state executioner after 2005. But if the death sentence was so unpopular and no one wanted to carry out executions either, why has it taken till 2025 to abolish the death penalty? I'm now joined by DW correspondent Privilege Muvanshiri and Lucia Masuka, the executive director of Amnesty International Zimbabwe. Lucia, I'll start with you. Why was the death penalty in Zimbabwe's law books in the first place, even long after it became an independent country?
The death penalty as a form of punishment in a formal justice system was introduced during colonialism in Zimbabwe. So upon the country being colonized by Britain in 1890, they introduced the common law, which was the Roman Dutch law and the English law. And we ended up as a country now having a dual legal system, the common law and the customary law. So this common law is the one that then introduced the death penalty as a form of punishment in the justice system. Prior to that, the indigenous Zimbabweans never used the death penalty as a form of sentence in the customary law system because the customary law system is restorative in nature. It's not retributive. The onset of the liberation struggle, where the local indigenous people were fighting against colonialism, the death penalty was then used to suppress dissent and to deal with those who were in the forefront of the liberation struggle. Therefore, we have instances or cases of executions of people such as Nehanda Chagwenya Kasikana, a spirit medium who played an integral role during the liberation struggle. We have the execution of Mashonganyika and Chief Chingaira. If you look at Nehanda's case, Nehanda and others, they were accused of murdering a white commissioner by the name Pollard. They were tried in March 1898 and executed on 27 April 1898. So within a month, their trial had been carried out and they had been executed. But we also then note through history that there was an introduction of pieces of legislation which were discriminatory in nature, but which introduced the death penalty. For instance, there was an ordinance that was introduced in 1903, which introduced the death sentence against African men who were accused of attempted rape of white women. Then with the escalation of the liberation struggle and the unilateral declaration of independence in 1965, there were other pieces of legislation that were then introduced, like the Law and Order Maintenance Act of 1960, which introduced various crimes or offenses that were meant to deal with those that were fighting the liberation struggle. For instance, in 1963, they introduced a death sentence in respect of those who were accused of petrol bombing, which is one of the methods that was being used by people who were waging the liberation struggle at that time. Then in 1967, the death sentence was introduced again in respect of possession of firearms, where if you were found in possession of firearms, you would then be sentenced to death and executed. So you can see that it was actually being used for purposes of what they termed politically motivated crimes, but which were specifically against those who were waging the liberation struggle. And that's why when this piece of legislation was enacted, from some quarters, there were celebrations as people said, now we have decolonized our justice system because we have removed this form of sentence, which is a relic of colonialism. And then post-independence, the country still retained the death penalty in its statutes. But I think what is significant to note is that there was now a reduction of the number of people who were sentenced to death when you compare the numbers that were sentenced to death in the 70s and in the 80s. There was a significant reduction. There were no executions since 2005 until the abolition of the death penalty on the 31st of December. On the 31st of December, the death penalty abolition bill then abolished the death penalty or dealt away with the death penalty as a form of sentence.
And it's interesting you say that, Lucia, because one of the most famous people in Zimbabwe who actually was on death row was in fact the president Emmerson Mnangagwa himself. Now, I want to come to privilege on this. Following Zimbabwean media, much has been made about the fact that Emmerson Mnangagwa himself says he wanted the death penalty to be removed because he himself had been there. He'd been on death row when he was a young man. I believe he was only 21 at the time. It was during the liberation struggle. How has this been covered in Zimbabwe? Has it been met with sort of exuberance that the death penalty has kind of been abolished?
It has been extensively covered in the local mainstream media and as well as attracted interest from international media. I can't really say there's been exuberance. Of course, it has been received quite well by the community and even citizens in Zimbabwe. Lucia actually said it well that, you know, in terms of the culture of death penalty, Zimbabweans have not been for retributive justice in terms of the death penalty, because breaking it down, you'd see that how they used to do it from way back is that they would then say, if somebody murders a member of a family or someone from some family, there would be negotiations probably that would happen between those families, because the other family would say they are afraid of the avenging spirit of the person who would have been murdered. They would pay a certain number of cattle to the family that lost a loved one in the process. Or in some worst cases, you would find that family would demand maybe probably to have a girl to be given to this family that lost a loved one together with X number of cattle in terms of just appeasing that death. So it has been something, of course, from the time that the new constitution that we have now, the new constitution which was made in 2013, that you find that most people were not for the death penalty. A minority, yes, would say yes to death penalty. Some would say, okay, fine, an eye for an eye. If somebody kills, therefore they should be killed as well. But most people were not for the death penalty. Therefore, it's something that people have been following, of course, with keen interest. But in terms of the society itself in Zimbabwe, most people know and they've never upheld the death penalty as a form of punishment.
Yeah, I find this quite an interesting discussion, especially when you compare the Zimbabwe to its neighboring country, South Africa. And I'll come back to you, Lucia, on this. But, you know, South Africa, for instance, had the death penalty up until, I believe it was 1994. But because in that country there has been, you know, a lot of crime and a lot of violent crime, where there are some quarters of the population that in South Africa that say, you know, we should consider bringing the death penalty back. But Lucia, you're very much against this, from what I understand. And can you tell us why, in particular, that particularly in the Zimbabwean context, that the death penalty is not considered really a deterrent to violent crime?
There is no evidence, really, no empirical evidence that the death penalty deters crime. If anything, what we have observed is that in countries where they have abolished the death penalty, there hasn't been an increase in the number of murder cases. There is also an organization that collects information on the death penalty. It's called the Death Penalty Information Center. It analyzes murder statistics for states in North America. And they noted that the average murder cases in states which use the death penalty were actually higher than those without the death penalty for the period, I think, 2013 to 2020. In Zimbabwe, we had an interesting scenario. It should be a year ago when two men were sentenced to death for a ritual killing. And people celebrated, some quarters celebrated this conviction and sentence. But I think a few weeks thereafter, there was another case of ritual killing, which therefore shows that, look, the fact that there was a death sentence that was imposed doesn't necessarily mean that it sends a message to would-be murderers that they should not commit murder out of fear of the death sentence. Our view is that crime is as a result of multiple factors that intersect, which include poverty, which include unemployment, which include dysfunctional families, and so forth. Therefore, the focus of any justice system should also be to deal with some of these underlying factors, because harsh sentences do not necessarily translate to the reduction of crime. So as Amnesty International, we've been very clear. It infringes the right to life. It infringes the right to human dignity. It infringes the right to freedom from torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading forms of punishment. And therefore, it should not be used as a form of a sentence.
However, the discussion is also more of a, I would say, perhaps even a populistic one. You know, when people see violent crimes being committed, and you know, there's almost a knee-jerk reaction that, you know, this evil person needs to be put away so they can never ever commit such a crime again. But I just want to go one more time to what you were saying about the specific Zimbabwe case. What other factors were at play? Because Zimbabwean politicians disagree on almost most things, but this was one thing that actually went through with support from, it seems, all sides. So what other factors were at play there?
One of the things that we should overlook is the fact that the campaigning for the abolishment of the death penalty, for the abolition of the death penalty, was carried out for some time in Zimbabwe. And what we saw and observed in terms of the de facto moratorium from 2005, where there was no execution, the changes that were introduced by the 2013 Constitution also speak to, I think, policymakers who were of the view that indeed this form of sentence is not a sentence that should be part of the justice system. And this came about as a result of a number of factors, including the fact that under the Universal Periodic Review, reports would be given that highlighted that Zimbabwe must abolish the death penalty. So that's one. But secondly, the president himself publicly stated that he was opposed to the death penalty. So as a leader, when one puts out their position on a certain issue, it also influences a shift in or in opinions and views in respect of policymakers and the generality of the populace. Then the other factor is the role that then the member of parliament who brought in this piece of legislation as a private member's bill, Honorable Mshoriwa, played in just being brave enough to bring it up. So in the history of the country, again, private members' bills never really made it to ultimately be considered and passed through parliament. But in this particular case, when he brought it, because there were others also on the other side who were of the view that indeed the death penalty should be removed from our statutes, there was that support. But I must hasten to highlight that when it was initially introduced in parliament, there were some who were opposed to it. And they publicly stated it, you know, if you go through the Hansard. But along the way, with the public hearings being conducted, because this piece of legislation or the bill was taken out for public hearings by parliament, more than 80% of the people that attended the public hearings were very clear to say they were opposed to the death penalty. And the historical perspective as well, because when we took out the bill to the people ahead of the public hearings, we shared with them the history of this form of sentence, which they were not aware of. And what it brought out is that sometimes people, like you say, they say it from an emotive point of view and from an uninformed point of view.
And Privilege, I want to come back to you on this because, you know, as a longtime reporter in Zimbabwe, you must have also come across people who, were the families of victims of violent crimes where I believe it's about 60 people are on death row currently in Zimbabwe. Have you been able to speak to people who are directly affected by this, family members of victims of violent crimes where the perpetrator was then put on death row, basically?
You know, the reaction to this has been mixed. You can treat it as case by case, but the majority, there's not been that appetite and drive, you know, for people at family levels to campaign or push for the death penalty to be upheld. Of course, in some cases, what has been mentioned by Lucia, to say that you have had cases where people are sentenced to death because of they were convicted because of ritual killings. And then before you know it, you have another ritual killing. So speaking to some families have not been, those that lost loved ones, maybe as a result of violent crimes. We have not had families that have vigorously campaigned or pushed the justice system to uphold the death penalty. If you go to parliament, the private member bill that was brought, you asked earlier on about the issue of seeing the opposition and the ruling party working together to agree to pass the bill. One, if you look at the private member who brought the bill to parliament, he himself is from the opposition. And the opposition, even during the making of the 2013 constitution, they were advocating for the abolition of the death penalty. Why? If you look at it, they were also seeing a loophole where, the ruling party or even those that are in power at present would maybe have an appetite as well to want to use the death penalty against opposition supporters. We have had some opposition supporters were even charged and were even convicted and given death sentences for killings that they did not do. You see, so that's why you would see that. I think at the back of people's minds, they would say, okay, fine. What if it also happens to me? Would I want to get a death sentence simply because maybe I murdered someone? And sometimes when these murder cases are brought before the justice system, when they are brought to trial, you'd see that maybe, yes, someone did it willingly or someone they did not do it intentionally to kill somebody. And in some cases, particularly on the political side, some activists would be charged for political violence and be given sentences like the death sentence for crimes that they did not commit.
That's a good point you raise, Privilege, about that, because the other thing I wanted to quickly discuss with Lucia is can you discuss a little bit the loophole in the law in which the government could perhaps reinstate the death penalty? Is there provision for that, for example, during a state of emergency? Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, the death penalty is effectively the state killing a person. And if the state decides somebody, no matter what crime they actually end up committing, if the state decides that they deserve the death penalty, then it is the state killing them. So in which situation could provision be made for the death penalty to be reintroduced, even on an emergency basis?
The piece of legislation that was enacted on the 31st of December provides for the possibility of the invocation of the death sentence under the Defense Act. What is important to note is that the Defense Act is applicable to military officers and not civilians. So essentially what this enactment is saying is that during a public emergency, when a public emergency has been declared, the automatic suspension of the death penalty, which took effect from the date of the enactment of this piece of legislation, that immediately when a public emergency is declared, that suspension will be uplifted. The automatic suspension of the use of the death sentence under the Defense Act will be uplifted, and the death sentence will be applicable during the period of the public emergency, which therefore means that if a person commits a crime, a military officer commits a crime, is tried by a martial court or a military court, and is convicted of murder and is sentenced to death, that death sentence is recognized. However, upon the ending of the public emergency, we then revert to a situation where the death sentence is then suspended again. So that's how it is worded. So it can be reintroduced during public emergencies, specifically in respect to military officers. And that is, for us as Amnesty International, something that is undesirable, because as an organization, we have always said that we oppose the death penalty in all circumstances, regardless of the nature of the offense, the person involved, the innocence, or otherwise. And therefore, we are urging the government to consider repealing or to actually repeal this particular provision that talks of the possibility of the reinstatement of the death sentence under the Defense Act during public emergencies.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
Just a quick interjection here. That message of progressing past the death penalty is currently being hotly debated in Liberia, Ghana, and Kenya. It has been 25 years, quarter of a century, since the last person was executed in either of those nations. It's especially a talking point in Nairobi, Kenya. While some, like Matthew Olu, are not fussed about seeing the death penalty abolished per se.
So it doesn't really matter when it is scrapped or not scrapped, because it has been decades since the last person was hung, who was Hezekiah Ochuka, having committed a capital offense on treason. It should just be let it be in place so that it scares people, because Kenyans have become so much egocentric.
Other ordinary Kenyans like Paul Ibrahim and Victor Njage are more direct.
I believe that Kenya should actually scrap the death sentence, because I believe that everyone does have the right to live. Despite you being allowed to live, you must also serve your sentence, because a death sentence is pretty much an escape from you having to spend years in prison to be able to understand the severity of the crime that you have committed.
Kenya should scrap the death sentence completely, as other African countries have. I feel it also denies people the chance to mend their ways and become a better person in society.
With this in mind, We do have to remember that a number of sub-Saharan African nations still have the death penalty. This includes Botswana, Tanzania, Cameroon, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, and Nigeria. Now, coming back to Lucia Masuka, I think a real question one really has to ask is, where does this leave other African countries when they see that Zimbabwe has made this strong statement saying, basically, we are done with the death penalty?
It does send a message to other African countries to say, please follow suit. I think in our statement, we referred to it as a beacon of hope to those who are campaigning for the abolition of the death penalty. Because what it says is that, look, if you are still using this form of sentence, you are now amongst the isolated few, because over two-thirds of the world has moved towards abolition. As a country, we do recognize that in terms of our obligations under international treaties, under international norms and standards, we need to advance the right to life and the right to human dignity. We foresee a situation where those countries that may have pending pieces of legislation, like Kenya, also following suit. But what I should also highlight is that there has been progress, though slow, because if you look at where we've come from across the world, I think when we started this campaign as Amnesty International, there were just 16 countries that had abolished the death penalty. And now we are talking of, depending on the classification that is used by the organization that is reporting as Amnesty, we are talking of 113. With other organizations, they're talking of 144 countries. It sends that message to say we should move towards removing this cruel form of punishment from our statutes.
That's where we will have to leave things for today. You can join us on our Facebook page, DW Africa, to keep up with the latest happening across Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to co-producer Isaac Mugabe, who edited the show. I'm Kai Nebe.
DW. Made for Minds.